Stay tuned after the show for a message from Nokia.
The discussion that I always have with people in Europe, they're always like, why doesn't the U.S. have universal health care? You know, why don't you give everybody health insurance? Why don't you see that as a right? And what I always explain to them is, for many Americans, you have different conceptions of freedom. And a lot of people feel like it should be my decision. And if I want to open my business, I should be allowed to open it. If I want to go to a business that's open, even when public health experts say it should be shut down, I should have the freedom of choice to do that.
I'm Sarah Wheaton, and I'm the senior health reporter here at Politico Europe in Brussels.
So here, you know, people, when they're going for a walk, if I'm out walking my dog, I don't wear a mask because I'm outside. And when I'm in the grocery store and I know I'm going to be breathing all over everybody in the aisle and I have to talk to the cashier, I wear a mask, and I have to wear it on public transportation. So when I take public transportation, I wear a mask. But in the United States, mask wearing is this huge political issue, and sometimes freedom and public health can have a tension with each other.
I'm Jeremy Siegel. This is Politico Dispatch. And today, what can the U.S. learn from how other countries have responded to the coronavirus? Take me back to the early months of the pandemic. Where does coronavirus hit in Europe, and how do governments respond?
Well, it all started in Italy, and it seemed to just proceed like an avalanche.
Tonight, new images of Italy in crisis. The number of dead surging by 793, a total of 4,825 dead, making this the deadliest day so far anywhere in the world.
And then the whole country went under quarantine, and we heard these horror stories about doctors not being able to treat all the patients that were coming and having to make, you know, gut-wrenching decisions about who to treat.
Corpses wait here for cremation. The morgues are overflowing. 53,578 total cases, turning doctors into heroes and victims.
Pretty quickly, countries started shutting borders, which in the EU, the whole kind of purpose of the EU is to have these open borders. So that was a very striking decision for leaders to make. And it proceeded like that for about 2 months. Countries did decide to talk through the European Union institutions to try to coordinate their exit strategies, as we put it. And while that hasn't been perfect, we have seen a very slow de-escalation that is relatively consistent across the bloc. So now in Belgium, life is pretty much back to normal. You can go and eat inside at a restaurant. They just have rules about how far apart people have to be. We're also seeing the borders reopen. So as of Monday, you'll be able to start, a few countries will let you kind of travel. And then everything should reopen as far as the borders, even to non-EU countries on July 1st.
So this has been a fairly coordinated process, with entire countries locking down and closing their borders. How does that compare to what we've seen in the U.S.?
Well, it seems to be a bit all over the place. We're now seeing Arizona and Florida really seeing huge upticks. And I have to say, that's kind of, just on a personal note, it's a bit scary for me because my parents live in Florida, and they've been talking to me about the experience there. It just seems much less consistent. It seems like some restaurants have never really closed there. People are basically just making their own decisions about how much social distancing they want to do. And of course, we saw the governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, who's a key Trump ally, really resist doing much of a lockdown. He did do a little bit of a lockdown, but he started it late. And so it is striking from where I'm sitting in Europe to see the U.S. states just really make their own decisions and have quite a patchwork of results. And I guess in some ways it will be a way to really understand whether these lockdown measures work, because we can see if the places that did a consistent lockdown kind of got the spread under control, and places that just kind of were less organized or were more determined to let life go on as normal, we'll see if they end up kind of having to deal with outbreaks that really go out of control as a result.
Well, you mentioned that a number of states are seeing a surge in cases right now. In the European Union, countries have made a lot of progress in flattening their curves. Do you think the U.S. can learn anything from the European response?
I think that what EU officials are most proud of is that they have been able to persuade the different countries in the EU to work together and talk to each other about the choices they were making. EU countries make their own decisions on health policies. Likewise, US states can make a lot of their own decisions about not only their health systems, but whether they do lockdowns and that sort of thing. And I think that in Europe, they did find that when they did start working together, they were able to get things more under control. They didn't have people in one country looking across the border at another country and, you know, complaining that that people in that country had rights to do things that they didn't. In Belgium and France and Germany and Italy, the curve is not only flattening, I mean, it just really seems to be dropping. The other point that an expert that I just got off the phone with made is the countries in general that do well are the countries where their political figures and their public health officials are both making the same point. And I think it's pretty safe to say that that doesn't really happen as far as the White House. And so you could make the argument that from a public health perspective, European countries are dealing with this much more effectively. You have had some tensions between public health officials and politicians in Europe. I don't want to claim that like Europe is this like rational, science respecting, you know, utopia. But in general, you hear the same message coming from public health officials and politicians in Europe.
In China, which was the initial epicenter of the outbreak, they quickly instituted strict lockdown measures, even stricter than Europe. And they really appeared to get things under control. But this week, it looks like there's been a resurgence of cases. Keeping in mind everything we just talked about with the U.S. and with Europe, how do you square the fact that China is seeing this surge with the stringent steps it's taken?
Well, this is to be expected, and this is what everybody is bracing for. There's an understanding that the lockdowns work as long as you're doing them, and then when you stop doing lockdowns, you don't really know what's going to happen. So far, and you know, I add the normal dose of skepticism to messages coming from the Chinese government, because we found that they are not always as forthright or transparent as we would like them to be. But so far, it seems like Beijing is trying to do a sort of soft lockdown. They're sort of limiting a lot of the restrictions to people from high-risk neighborhoods. I think that this is the model that everybody hopes to follow. We don't know if it will play out that way, but inevitably little outbreaks are going to crop up. Now we just have to see if they're able to quash it again without really drastic measures again.
So what we're seeing in China could show that at some point in Europe and in the U.S., once it looks like things are under control here, a resurgence of cases is going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's broad consensus among epidemiologists and public health experts that until we have a vaccine, that the coronavirus is just going to be a fact of life. And so what's happening in Beijing, that is our future. It's everybody's future. And the goal of public health officials and politicians is not to have full lockdown again. But I would not be surprised if I get told that somebody in my social circle sometime over the next 2 years has the coronavirus. And so I need to personally quarantine. I think that's the best case scenario for pretty much everyone at this point.
Sarah Wheaton, thanks so much for talking with me.
Sure.
Also today, Facebook has taken down political ads run by President Trump's re-election campaign that featured a symbol used by Nazis. The ads, which started running on Wednesday, included an upside-down red triangle, a symbol that was once used to designate political dissidents in concentration camps, and a variation was used to designate Jewish political prisoners. The Trump campaign maintains that the inverted triangle is a symbol of the anti-fascist group known as Antifa that Trump has frequently attacked during recent protests over racial justice and police brutality. In a statement, Facebook said the ads violated their policy against organized hate. The move comes after weeks of backlash from Facebook employees, lawmakers, and the American public over CEO Mark Zuckerberg's decision not to take action when President Trump threatened protesters with shooting during demonstrations in Minneapolis over the killing of George Floyd. And President Trump is mounting a campaign for more debates against Joe Biden ahead of the November election. His re-election campaign has tapped former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani to head up the effort, which includes a push to have a say in choosing debate moderators. The move marks a significant reversal from the campaign after Trump threatened to boycott debates last year. Now, advisors think more of them will sow doubts about Biden's stamina for the job. In a conference call on Thursday with the Nonpartisan Commission on Presidential Debates, both Giuliani and Trump's campaign manager pushed for the debates to begin before early voting starts and requested a fourth debate on top of the three that are already scheduled. The campaign also wants them to take place on weekday nights other than Thursday so they don't coincide with NFL games. The Politico Dispatch production team this week included Jenny Ament and Sadeep Reddy. Our executive producer is Irene Noguchi. Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts, and if you can, leave a rating and review. That'll help other people find us. I'm Jeremy Siegel. Thanks for listening.
Secure and reliable connections are critical to keeping our country and the economy running. That's why 90% of the U.S. depend on Nokia to stay connected. As a leader in American connectivity, Nokia provides IP routing solutions used by every major service provider in the nation. Nokia technology empowers our country to keep America strong by keeping people connected. Learn more at nokia.com/opentomore.